baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Good day and welcome to the walk-off, everybody. This is our Boxing Day special, if you will. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack, and we have a very special guest who gets requested quite often here on the walk-off, Craig Ballard. Ooh. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Thank you so, and thank you for considering my DMs to you guys, somebody requesting me to come back. Thank you. That's pretty neat.
So we'll get into all the topics in just a second here. We'll deal with housekeeping first. I did want to just give an expressed felt thank you to everyone out there who has clicked on our videos recently. I know we did a little review on the Dalton Bar show trade, and we had over 11,000 views, which is the most we've ever had on a video, and that's all because of this walk-off community. Our clip channel is at 850 subs right now, and we have gained almost 200 in a month, and we're pushing for 1,000 to start 2023. So if you've yet to subscribe and want to do us a little, give us a little Christmas bump there, that would be awesome to feel free to subscribe. Of course, we appreciate everyone in this walk-off community. You can always join the Discord. That is free and that is happening. We've got well over 200 members at this point. Rabid Blue Jays fans talking baseball all the time. The link for that is in the show note. Twitter at Walk-Off Podcast. We're very active there and we actually are pushing 1,500 followers now. So very cool to see so many people jumping on board with us there. And you can follow us on Instagram, the Walk-Off Podcast. There we go. Let's get this thing going. I'm going to throw to you here, Adam, because I know before we hit record, you were kind of making a list and checking it twice. So I'll let you to get to that.
All right. So I've come up with, and just save your strong opinions for the end, because I know, Craig, Scott, you might fight me on some of these here. But I want to do a winners and losers of this Dalton Varsho trade. So right off the bat, I'll just get this out of the way. I think this is a win-win for both teams. I think both teams upgraded. Both teams got some real valuable assets there. So Blue Jays, Diamondbacks, both winners. Dalton Varsho, winner in this trade. Anytime a good player goes to a good team, that is good for them. Danny Jansen and Alejandro Kirk, winners in this trade. They're sticking around. They have some long-term-ish security with a contending team. That's good news for them. Gabriel Moreno is a winner in this deal. He's not going to be with a contending team this year. However, he's going to play more than 20 games at the big league level. That's a certainty. I think he might fight for the starting role right away in Arizona this year. So I do think that's a good news situation for him. Lastly, for winners, I have Ricky Tiedemann. Didn't get traded. There was lots of talk of him being a piece of a package and getting shipped out. Glad to see he's still with the Blue Jays. He's got to be happy to be a part of a winning organization as well. So there's a winner. As far as losers go, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is a loser only in terms of this deal. I think he's a great kid, but good player, was a part of this core for many years. And now he's going to have to watch this core compete for World Series without him. Best of luck in Arizona to Lourdes. I have Kevin Biggio as a loser in this deal and this offseason. I'm still a big believer in Kevin Biggio. I think he can get it together. However, this is a lot
not
more
without playing left, time.
This is a lot more left-handed bat lineup for the 2023 season. So I think the opportunities to just put Kevin in the lineup out of necessity just to balance the lineup aren't going to be there. Defensively, this team got better. I just don't, barring a case of bad tacos and him filling in to cover injury time, I just don't know where he fits in the lineup in 2023. And then lastly, I have the Pittsburgh Pirates are a loser in this deal as well. I just think with that's one less team bidding for Brian Reynolds. So I think the price goes down on Brian Reynolds, although I don't think he gets moved at all still this offseason. But if he does, I think the price goes down just because there's one less team in the market for him, which in a hilarious turn of events, if the price does go down, would annoy a lot of Blue Jays fans when they see the Yankees get Brian Reynolds for less than we paid for Dalton Varsho. So that's my list of winners and losers. How are you feeling, Craig? What do you think of this trade?
That was such a good list. That was so good. I'll add winners as Shapiron Atkins. And I say that because Shapiron Atkins, you know, I'm firmly on record on the Walk-Off podcast numerous times that the Blue Jays have never been in better hands than Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins. Now, as Adam has pointed out many times, now that doesn't mean they're batting 1,000, comma, who is batting 1,000, right? What regime is batting 1,000, right? So we can for sure point to things Kikuchi, like we could for sure go down these roads, yes. But one criticism that I would absolutely levy at Shapiro and Atkins is a complete inability to draft and raise and develop outfield capital, outfield prospects, outfield goodness to come up and produce on the big league level. Now, all of a sudden, Dalton Varsho walks in the door. Now, he's not that prospect, right, because he's 26 years old. But contractually speaking, he's that prospect, right, controllable for the next, what, four seasons it is right now? Mm-hmm. So that is the young up-and-coming bat that they haven't been able to produce and draft themselves. They do that from a position of absolute strength. We knew one of the catchers was going. And for us here, you know, on the we mentioned many times on the Walk-Off podcast, if you're one of the 17 billion subscribers that Scott was mentioning earlier, then you've heard us and growing, then you've heard us mention before that this offseason, Tao and or Lourdes were being traded. So we had our eyes open that both may go. I know it's still a little bit of a surprise when you actually see it. But just from, again, Shapiro and Atkins, they're not in charge of the 2023 Toronto Blue Jays. They're in charge of the Toronto Blue Jays. And adding somebody with this level of contract control going forward, I don't know of a trade. Man, I've been racking my brain. I don't know of a trade like this in Toronto Blue Jay history. And the only comps I've seen were the McGriff and Fernandez for Robbie and Joker. Well, I don't even see that as a huge comparison because that was multiple players. That was the team that if they hadn't made that level of a move, they weren't going to be the perennial contenders that they turned out to be. If the Blue Jays entered the 2023 season as is, they're already going to make the playoffs. They're already a playoff team.
Yeah.
So I just I don't see the comparison. I think this is a completely unprecedented trade in Toronto Blue Jay history. And the last thing I'll say, Adam, a year from now, you will be adding the fan base to that list of winners. The Toronto Blue Jays fan base is going to fall. Right now, it's so fresh, right? What, Tao and Lourdes? What? It's so fresh. At Christmas, what? Wait till they see Dalton Varsho innings 1 through 9 between the lines of a baseball diamond. It's going to turn some things around for Blue Jay fans.
That's a great point.
And I think this is one thing. Sorry, Adam, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's a great point. With Dalton Varsho, I think he is such an unknown commodity that is a real factor in the sting that some Blue Jays fans are feeling right now, because obviously Teoscar was a fan favorite for a lot of fans. Lourdes Gurriel, very popular among the fan base. So to see two of the most charismatic, fun fan favorites out the door for some guy who's been playing in Arizona that nobody knows who he is, looks like a tight end. Is this guy even a baseball player? Right. But he's very much a baseball player. And I think 2023 is going to really open some eyes to who Dalton Varsho is now.
Yep.
You really touched on what I was going to say there, Adam, and I love that. And it's just that, you know, we're Blue Jays fans. Most of our time spent watching baseball is in the American League. And when we are turning our heads to the National League, it's normally for the playoffs. And so a team like the Arizona Diamondbacks, who's plugged into the Diamondbacks, but the biggest nerds out there, like almost nobody. So I think that this Blue Jays fan base is going to fall in love with Dalton Varsho. The dude is a gamer. The amount of ground he covers in the outfield. I mean, I've been watching those compilations of him catching balls in the outfield, and it is just, it's so exciting to watch a dude cover the amount of ground he covers. And I know that everyone is concerned about the offense, right? You watch Tao go out, you watch Gurriel go out, and you're like, well, is this going to hurt so much that they're not putting up runs? But think about the run prevention, and this is not something that people like to give a lot of credit to, because it's probably the least shiny part of the game. It's the least fancy, it's the least exciting. You know, like watching Dalton Varsho run into foul territory and make a sliding catch for an out that most people would just be like, okay, all right, one out, third inning.
Let me jump in here because this is a hilarious topic. I've got an eye on the comment section all the time. There's so much toxic positivity. I love it. But there is sprinkled in there a few trolls. And the people who poo-poo on the defensive value that Kevin Kiermaier and Dalton Varsho bring to this team, I see you, and you're the same people who also poo-poo on how bad Bo Bichette is defensively. So, like, what are we, like, pick one. Does defense matter or not? Because it's a direct, confrontation. I also just want to, while we're on the topic of the comment section, when we traded for, or when we signed Kevin Kiermaier, a lot of Tampa Bay Rays fans came to our comment section and did not speak highly of Kevin Kiermaier. Good luck with that head case. Was a lot of the comments we got from Tampa Bay fans, which surprised me. However, when we traded for Dalton Varsho, probably 24 comments.
Yes.
From people who are like Diamondbacks fan here, you guys are going to love Dalton Varsho.
So yeah.
For whatever that's worth.
I'll add one last little thing here. Number one, Adam, great job with that winners and losers list. I loved every second of it. I did want to just push back a little on the Lourdes Gurriel Jr. being a loser in this scenario. I think that the opportunity for him in Arizona to have a big year going into his free agent year, I think that there is an opportunity for him here to maybe have a big season that he wouldn't necessarily be given the same sort of opportunities in Toronto, especially with how much this front office has put effort into balancing the lineup and creating more left-handed bats. So even if Gurriel stuck around, let's say he wasn't part of this trade, he's still going to see less time on the field with this Blue Jays team, especially being designated as an outfielder only. And one thing I heard out of Arizona is imagine if they start trying to use Gurriel a little bit more in the infield, which he does have experience with. Now, we all know as Jays fans that experiment didn't work very well in Toronto. However, again, the Diamondbacks are a bad team. And it is going to give a little bit more leeway for them to do things with Gurriel that maybe the Jays wouldn't have done.
Can I just mention as well, as far as the fan base concerned about the offense, that's the fan base of the team that scored 9 runs on their way out the door, correct? So first of all, yeah. Offense didn't seem to be the problem all season long. That's A. And B, I'm going to take you back to the 3-day trade deadline marathon we did right here on the Walk Off podcast. We talked all day on that trade deadline that unless it's a Soto or a Trey Turner, like unless it's somebody, you know, superstar, there's nothing that could walk in this clubhouse that improves the offense more than Slim Daddy Vladdy being Slim Daddy Vladdy. This was a good season for him. This was a good season for a lot of players, I should say. This was an unacceptable season from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And Bo, instead of putting one good offensive month together, go ahead and string 6. Go ahead for the whole season, Bo. If September Bo is 2023 Bo, then this decrease of offense is not going to materialize itself. George Springer having a full season, this decrease in offense is not going to materialize itself as much as people are concerned with. Alejandro Kirk had a terrible second half. If he's closer to that first half hitter that the Jays put in the cleanup spot, then this loss of offense is not going to happen.
Craig, out of curiosity, do you feel that with the addition of Varsho, the addition of Kiermaier, the addition of Bassett, that this front office is a little bit more focused on pitching and defense? Do you think that is a turn that this organization is trying to focus more on?
We've been hearing Ross Atkins talk we're going on almost like 2 years now of talking about that run prevention. And you mentioned that's not what a lot of fan base wants to hear. That's not what's sexy and enjoyable things like that. But if that's what's going to help you win a World Series, those are the memories that are going to out-trump anything going out there. And again, I'm just going to go back to that. We're all still having nightmares of that 10-9 loss to Seattle. If Dalton Varsho was in left field, we saw Raimel Tapia misplay 2 balls that were a big deal in that game. I can tell you with certainty neither one of those misplays happened. And it just goes, I mean, and so on and so on and so on. It's going to be such a cumulative effect. But absolutely, the writing's been on the wall when Shapiro and Atkins talk about run prevention. And then further to that, who did they handpick to be the new bench coach? Donny Baseball, Don Mattingly. Don Mattingly's walking in the door, and he's not going to be – he doesn't have a sense of humor for these little reindeer games of how poorly the Blue Jays play fundamental baseball. He's walked in the door to clean that up. He's walked in the door to help take away those free runs from extra teams and help with the hitting for all the manufactured runs that the Blue Jays leave because they're such a home run or bust team. So I don't think there's any doubt about it. Run prevent. Look at who's walked in the door in the last year. All of a sudden, we woke up one morning and Matt Chapman was a Toronto Blue Jay. That's run prevention at the trade deadline. Whit Merrifield, that's run prevention. Now this trade here for Varsho, that's run prevention. That's the name of the game right now for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Greg,
I want to bring up – sorry, go ahead, Adam.
Just because you mentioned Matt Chapman. Matt Chapman's a free agent at the end of this year. What do the Blue Jays do there?
We've been on the opposite side of this the whole time. You guys have wanted an extension for Chapman for a while now. I've not wanted the extension on Matt Chapman. If he has a war this season, 4.5 to 5 war, I'll be singing a different tune. But I'm looking at a Relvis. I'm looking at there's a Barja. I'm looking at so many guys who require, not hopefully can get, require a major league position at the end of this season. Some of them are going to be ready this season. There's just not going to be a spot on the big league level for them. So what it's going to cost to re-up with Matt Chapman, man, I'd rather turn that over to an Arelvis or to a Barja. I'd rather see somebody else in that position. Again, I can be talked at. If Matt Chapman is going to have some sort of career season then show that he's still got massive amounts left in the tank, then I could be talked into something. But right here, right now, I'm in the minority. I don't want the extension for Chapman.
No, if we do go into 2024 and the infield looks like Vladdy, Espinal, Bichette, and then either Barger or Martinez as our everyday third baseman, what kind of a defensive production should we expect from a rookie? I mean, a lot of criticism for Bo and his defensive growing pains that he's going through. Is there going to be that same kind of frustrating growing pains when we're watching a 22-year-old airmail it to first base? And is that fair?
I think it's a great point.
Because when I'm looking at the Gabriel Moreno trade, it's funny. The day of the trade, Scott and I spent an hour talking, and I had talked myself into keeping Gabriel Moreno, like, as my personal preference. I'm like, okay, yeah, Gabriel Moreno, in terms of like the farm system and sustaining the competitive window, there's value there. And then as soon as he was traded, I had to talk myself out of, all right, this is why it's a good thing we got rid of him. And the reason I come to is catching takes a long time to learn. And with the win now mentality, this is a win now move for Dalton Varsho. We don't really have time to let Gabriel Moreno learn how to call a game at the major league level while we're trying to win a World Series, right? So with, now that I've talked myself into that mindset, the idea of having Addison Barger as our 140 game third baseman in 2024 kind of flies in the face of that. Like, are we a team that's looking to develop guys into everyday big leaguers and we're going to let them figure it out? Or not. And that's where I'm kind of I'm conflicted right now. Like, from a financial standpoint, I understand the idea of having Arelvis Martinez play third base for free in 2024. That's great.
Yeah.
But also, I don't like the idea of 27 errors and shrugging every time there's a ground ball hit to third base and going, well, I hope Vladdy's a gold glove in this particular moment because anything can happen. That's a concern.
And Arelvis Martinez, that's a really good point, dude, because Arelvis Martinez, yes, he does play a little third base. The majority of the time that he played in double A was in left field and a second or shortstop. We watched the stalwart, versatile fielder that is Cavan Biggio play every position, then be thrust into the hot corner and implode. So I get your trepidation, dude. And I don't know if I have any answer to what you're kind of asking here other than, yeah, it's kind of a scary proposition to put a rookie at third base in 2024 in the middle of a contention window.
Craig, can you talk us off this ledge?
No, I like all the points you guys are making. I really do. Like, see, for me, I'm the question is, what would we do now? See, I just, there's so much more I need to see this season from
that.
see how I feel about it. Because one thing I think we might all agree with, a year ago from now on the walk-off, we would have been talking about, hey, Matt Chapman's going to be a big deal to improve Bo's defense. If we're having an open, honest conversation, that's not what happened. That did not happen. Bo still had all kinds of issues in this season. So will this season be the season we see some more like that? So my I love the point you're making there, but my jury's still out because Barger and Aurelvis are going to have to play somewhere. Maybe they can play second with Merrifield. I don't know. They're going to have to find some sort of at-bats. If Aurelvis's bat is major league, you know, worthy like I think it's going to be. So I don't have a great answer on Matt Chapman right now. I love the points you guys are making. For me, I don't want to do anything with it. I want this season to play out. I want the season to play out and then a decision on Matt Chapman.
Well, that's definitely an option. We do not need to rush an extension for Matt Chapman, and even if we have to compete on the free agent market to re-sign him. So,
and I do get the feeling, Craig, that this front office is kind of in the same boat. I think we would have already seen an extension to Matt Chapman if that was something that was going to happen prior to the start of this season. And I could be out to lunch. We'll see what happens there. All right, I want to take a sharp left turn here into very divisive waters, which is clubhouse culture. I personally feel like there is a gray area here. You can see that this front office has moved Teoscar and Lourdes, which we already touched on. They are two of the most charismatic, fun-loving clubhouse dudes you could possibly have. And the joy and the fun that they brought this clubhouse will forever be remembered by Blue Jays fans. I do think that it's going to change the clubhouse, taking two big personalities like Teoscar and Lourdes out and putting in a Kevin Kiermaier and a Dalton Varsho. And it's not that I am overly familiar with the kind of character that they're going to bring to this clubhouse, so I can't really speak on what they're going to add to the clubhouse, but I can speak on what is being removed from the clubhouse. And it feels as if the front office is trying to make this group a little more, for lack of a better word, serious. Now, this rubs a lot of people the wrong way that I would even bring this up. I feel like you can have, I feel like there should be a sliding scale as to how much fun you can have and should have and would have. Like, I don't think you have to be 100% all fun or zero fun. I think there's a middle ground here. But would you feel comfortable saying that this is something that the front office is concentrating on? Not necessarily changing the culture, but maybe becoming a little more focused in the approach.
For me personally, I think that these things are coincidental. I think a big part of moving Teo and Lourdes was they were both jammed done as Blue Jays at the end of this. There's not been one re-up conversation with either one of them. They were both done as Toronto Blue Jays at the end of this season. So for me, this was all business. And we talked earlier about Shapiro and Atkins. That's an empty cupboard as far as a young up-and-coming outfielders that they've got. They've addressed that now. Weren't happy with the pitching staff. You bring in a Chris Bassett, who is an absolute gamer and going to be a great teammate. For me, these things seem coincidental. One thing I just couldn't disagree more with the sentiment that these changes are really going to upset Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and might affect his re-up opportunities. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. brings the party with him. His 25 best friends are going to be the 25 teammates that he has under any circumstances. This is not a problem. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. grew up in baseball dugouts. He is completely he's as well-versed as anybody in baseball, honestly, as anybody in baseball when it comes to the business of baseball. So that I feel like these moves were coincidental as far as the clubhouse.
I love that take. Atmosphere. I actually really love this take, Craig. Yes.
Yeah. As far as the atmosphere in that, I find that it's coincidental. And again, okay, so here's what I was thinking of last night, gentlemen. We all remember. We saw the footage. Slim Daddy Vladdy sitting at the edge of the dugout watching in 2021 as Boston won. Remember that? The Jays won that last day. They needed Boston to lose. And Slim Daddy Vladdy said he was distraught. He walked around he missed his flight back home. He walked around the city of Toronto for 3 days because he was just so distraught. That does not describe somebody who's okay with winning and losing as long as his best buddies are with us. That describes somebody that wants to win. And he is going to understand these moves were to help win. These moves are going to help win. And all that's been taken from him is one more season with these guys. As I say, they were done with both. Teo and Lawrence were done with Blue Jays at the end of this season.
Here's an interesting analogy for my own life, a comparable. Let me know if this rings a bell or rings true for either of you two gentlemen. I've always found anytime I've had a real job in my life that I'm always able to be friends with my coworkers, but the reverse has never once been true. Anytime I've had a job and I've gotten a friend hired, I cannot be coworkers with a friend. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Wow.
So I'm wondering if there's a comparable there where, like you said, Bo and Vlad or Vladdy was buds with these guys, but they couldn't win together. But if he's winning with someone, they're going to be friends.
That's such an interesting. And Adam, the jobs you're referring to didn't take place on a world stage. What's more important to Vlad? The sunflower seeds and the goofing around in that, or the wins and the losses? Because it seems to me that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is serious as cancer when it comes to wins and losses. That's what he cares about, is what it seems to me.
I will also say that the opinion that there's a shift toward, like, away from fun, I think this also coincides with the run prevention acquisitions that we've made, because offense is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But defense wins championships.
Do you guys remember, you're both young bucks, do you guys remember the Mark McGwire, the Maddox and Glavin campaigns from the early 90s? Tom Glavin and Greg Maddox, who are the size of my glass here, they're walking around in muscle shirts. They're trying to learn how to hit home runs because the tag
chicks dig the long chicks, ball. Hey, chicks, we got some long ball winners over here.
Yeah, exactly.
I really, really like that take, Craig, that this was much more a baseball move than it was about affecting clubhouse culture. And obviously it is going to. This is, I mean, to act like clubhouse culture isn't dependent on who's coming in and out is a very naive take. And I obviously things are going to change when you bring in different personnel. And we're going to need to wait and see, as Jays fans, what that change is going to look like. And I don't think change is bad. We talked right from the offset, right after they lost to Seattle, and we were all heartbroken. And we were all saying, this team needs a shakeup. Well, the shakeup's here. And whether you like it or not, they did exactly what we were all screaming to do. So how this plays out with the personalities and stuff, I think is still a work in progress, and we'll see where it goes. And if this team's more serious, that's fine. If they're just as fun, that's fine. Like, I really think that there's so much energy and time being put in by this fan base to judge whether there's a culture change going on or not. But who cares if wins are coming?
Yes, and you mentioned, Scott, that there shouldn't be a 100%, not strategy, but a 100% atmosphere in the clubhouse, you know, like a 100% rule one way or the other. I would take that one step further and say that I think that should fluctuate throughout the season as well. The
dog days of course. Of summer,
do something fun with your guys. Now the calendar turns to September 1st. Hey, let's get this buttoned up. It is go time. I think this is a clubhouse that's going to be led by Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Alec Manoah. So could they be super serious if they even needed to be? Like, could they be super, super?
All right. Right? Let's be real. The day Vladdy walks into the dugout with a crew cut is the day we have to be concerned about clubhouse culture being too serious. I mean, once there's a no facial hair rule and we become blue pinstripes, like, and no facial hair, then that's the day we got to worry. But otherwise,
okay. So there is some interesting, I guess, rumors, for lack of a better way of putting it, that came out the other day that the Red Sox may be maybe not interested, but they could be convinced to move Chris Sale. Now, we all are aware, especially anyone who watched baseball in 2018, what an absolute beast and strikeout king Chris Sale can be. Now, since then, he has, of course, struggled with injuries mightily, to the point where we've watched him flip out in AAA clubhouses and act like a little baby. right? Which, you know what? I don't even judge the guy that much for. When you go through 3 years of trying to get healthy and just can't seem to do it, I get that frustration. There's a lot of talk on Blue Jays Twitter of, would Chris Sale be a fit as a fifth starter, or, well, obviously, wherever he fits in the lineup, we don't need to put a number to him, but would he be a fit on this Blue Jays team? I'm really curious what you think, Craig. Do you like Chris Sale? Is this even an option you would consider? And do you think that there's even a way that the Red Sox would trade a guy like Sale to a division rival?
Santiago Espinal for Steve Pierce. There's a history there between these two franchises. I don't think the Blue Jays are going to be in on a Chris Sale or in on a Trevor Bauer. I think teams that need to take, to roll that dice on a guy that's high upside will be more. I think the Blue Jays look at that top four with Man Mountain, Manoa, Gausman, Barrios, and now Chris Bassitt walking in the door. We know the entire fan base has given up on Mitch White. The Toronto Blue Jays have not given up on Mitch White. We know this. Unfortunately, we also know they haven't given up on Kikuchi as well. So my point being, the Blue Jays probably, well, the Blue Jays very much probably think, and Ricky Tiedemann at some point, so the Blue Jays probably feel like that starting rotation is already, you know, really strong for them. I could see maybe a Johnny Cueto. I could see maybe somebody like that at best, that veteran coming in on a really, really affordable contract. I could see something like that. But no, I don't think Sale is going to be on the Blue Jays radar. As I say, him and Bauer are the names I'm hearing a lot. I think they go to teams that won't mind rolling the dice because they're both still very high-end guys. Absolutely, yes. I personally am not interested in either one of them. And I'd be very, as I said, I think the Blue Jays probably feel like they've got their rotation right now.
Yeah, I would also add to the Trevor Bauer thing. Like, there's no, for so many reasons, he's not coming to Toronto. So we can just put that speculation to bed. One interesting thought that I have seen thrown out there, Trevor Bauer to a small market non-contending team for the start of the season and then flip them by the trade deadline to a contender.
Mm.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Right. Get some prospects or something back in return. They're going to be paying them league minimum this year. It does make a lot of sense that would be the way to go, and then let the New York Yankees,
even from an out of sight, out of mind kind of way of looking at it, right? Let him rebuild his value out
of the headlines of he's back in baseball and blah blah blah. That can all happen in Oakland,
Cincinnati.
They can take all the heat, and then the Yankees, the whoever's of the world, can swoop in after those initial hard feelings are out of the way, and then they can add him, unfortunately, to their competitive roster towards the end of the season.
That's a very insightful take, Adam. I like that take. Where it's,
well,
just,
it's not
like,
mine. I got it from the comment section. So kudos,
right,
to our,
but still, whoever it was that put that in there. I really like the idea of like letting this small market take all the heat and then the Mets swoop in.
Yeah. And the small market fans might see it as their, oh my God, we're finally going, we're finally doing something. That's really good. Mm-hmm. Let me just tell you real quick here. Because for me, the whole underlying theme of this Chris Sale talk is the fact that Boston yet again needs to look to get out from underneath the contract. So let's have the Boston Red Sox be the poster child for the Blue Jay fans who see these astronomical contracts going out for the Nimmos and all the players out there and wish the Blue Jays were involved in that. Let's remember, the Boston Red Sox had to give away Mookie Betts to get out from underneath the David Price contract. This is why,
yeah,
I say Shapiro and Atkins are doing such a good job, because they're not just cutting checks every offseason to build this team. They're building something sustainable. Boston had to give away Mookie freaking Betts in his prime so they could get out from underneath the David Price contract. Cautionary tale.
Craig, Adam brought something up on our last cast before Christmas, and he mentioned the fact that what this front office has done this offseason really feels like a lead up to signing Vlad. They haven't added a lot of money. The guys they have added have been term, who are here until 2027, 2026 for Chris Bassitt. You know, like, all of these additions haven't been these big mega contracts that maybe we thought as Jays fans was a possibility, and probably still is a possibility. Do you think that maybe this, and penny pinching is the wrong way of framing this, because I don't feel that that's what this organization is doing. because by no means is dishing out $63 million over 3 years to Chris Bassett penny pinching.
Yeah. Well, however, especially when we're like a top 10 salary in the league. And I'm pretty sure we're a luxury tax team this year.
Oh, we are.
Hard to argue we're penny pinching at that point. So anyway, sorry, continue.
But basically Adam's point was that this is all a lead up into making sure that the money is there come 2026 when you need to sign Vlad. Even if you need to do an extension, if you can get an extension done now and maybe however you structure the contract, the money will be there when it's needed to be there. Can you see that as like, do you feel the same way with this front office? Like, does it feel like maybe after this off season that an extension is more realistic for a Vladimir Guerrero Jr.?
I think it's a great call. I think one of the favorite, now the Jays have been looking for their own Whit Merrifield forever, but I think if truth be told, their favorite thing about Whit Merrifield, he's done after this season. Matt Chapman, done after this season. Hyunjin Ryu's money, done after this season. I think there's a lot of big money coming off the contract after this season that I don't think is coincidental, that I do think will work in this favor. I'm super intrigued, just like everybody else is. You guys know I don't think there's a re-up coming for Bo. How does that play itself out? When is the re-up coming for Vlad? All I've ever said about the re-ups for these guys is whenever the time is right, I just have absolute faith in Shapiro and Atkins that whenever the time is right to do something like this, they've thought it through and they're doing it. You guys probably get the comments all the time too. I feel like a lot of the Blue Jay fan base feels like Shapiro and Atkins need to be reminded. Oh, that's right. Oh, of course. The re-ups for Vladimir. Anyone on those re-ups for Vladimir Guerrero? There is an absolute plan in place here. There's an absolute plan in place. And I really like the point because the stars seem to be aligning now for the first time that we, you know, when would this be? The stars seem to be aligning for the first time that we might have an idea when it could be. And we're looking at it at the end of this season.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree. Okay. Anything to add Blue Jays wise before we get into Carlos Correa?
But the only thing that I'm really encouraging Blue Jay fans, I'm shouting it from the rooftops. This time last year, my shouting from the rooftops was that Major League Baseball is not ready for Alek Manoah. He's going to be an absolute star. We saw that happen. And this season right here, right now, Toronto Blue Jay fans, I'm absolutely saying to you, get excited about Whit Merrifield. Get excited about Zach Pop. Two massive, massive, massive contributors that nobody's talking about to the 2023 Toronto Blue Jays.
Like it.
Love that prediction, man. Love that prediction, especially Zach Pop. I mean, I shouldn't say that. Both guys I'm excited about. But Zach Pop, man, I think that he has just scratched the surface of what he can be for this team. And pretty exciting that it's a Canadian kid, too. Same sort of upside as Jordan Romano. Hey.
Scott, all I hear and all any of us hear is the Blue Jays need that flamethrower at the back of the bullpen. Would that be nice? Sure, it would. But here's my point. Three pitches minimum if we do the math for a strikeout. That's minimum. And how many pitch strikeouts are three? It's more like five, six, seven. So I will see your seven-pitch strikeout, which produced one out, and I will raise you a Zach Pop 97-mile-an-hour sinker at the bottom of the strike zone that produces a double play, one pitch, two out. So Zach Pop is going to be good for this team.
Yeah. No, agreed 100%. That sinker is just filthy, too. One of the better pitches in this Blue Jays bullpen, without a doubt. Okay, so just 2 days ago, let's go back a week, okay? The San Francisco Giants celebrating a major win when it comes to a megastar coming to the Bay Area. Fails the physical. Mets swoop in. And now you're like, holy crap. Steve Cohen then comes out and is like, of course he's a member of the Mets. I will shoot off my mouth whenever I want. Try and stop me. Well, now he has put his foot in his mouth a little bit because he has definitely muddied the waters now that the Mets are also having some troubles passing this medical on Carlos Correa. If you were to predict, do you think that in the end he's a Met? Do you think that the Players Association may even step in at this point and just be like, you can't announce this and then go back on it?
I do think he'll be a Met. I think the deal will end up being just a shell of what we've seen. I think it'll just be completely laden with opt-outs and elevators for the amount of games that are played as well. Like I think it'll be structured that way. I think you have to at this point. I've just never seen anything like this ever. I was stunned.
Me neither.
Yeah. So not just the San Fran shoe dropping. So we all woke up the next morning to not only was he not a Giant, but he was a Met. So how, what could San Fran have seen that the Mets in that short period of time saw and didn't have a problem with? Come to find out they hadn't seen it yet. Now they have seen it and it's concerning. The whole thing just super. And by the way, as much as Carlos Correa is good, this is all for a guy who's never hit 300 in his life, never driven in 100 runs in his life. Like, this is a guy who's missed a lot of time for a lot of injury. So I'm really fascinated by this story, but ultimately I'd rather him end up, I guess, out of the American League in case he does put together a healthy season, I suppose, right? I suppose we do want that. But I'm just going to be so stunned if he doesn't end up being a New York Met.
It would be so wild if this contract, if they get stuck with it. Like, you really touched on it there with the amount of games he's played. I don't think anyone can argue that Carlos Correa isn't an exceptional talent and one of the best shortstops in all of baseball. However, you look at his games played. I mean, a full season for this dude is 135 games. Like, look over the history. Like, those are the times, like, you're pointing those out. You know, there's a lot of, like, 67 games, 88 games. You know, whenever it's triple digits, it's like, okay, there's 120, there's 130. So
the best ability is availability, right? Like, I'm old school hockey fan. That's always been the argument. Greatest hockey player of all time, Wayne Gretzky, hands down. Most talented for me has always been Mario Lemieux. Unfortunately, had his health conditions. So the nod goes to Gretzky. Although, if I got to be honest, I'd say most talented of all time, Connor McDavid's making a real push. That kid's pretty freaky on the ice.
I'm going to inject my hockey knowledge. How about Rick Vive?
Yeah, there you go.
Sure.
Thank you.
Let's get back to baseball before all the Blue Jays fans really roast us. Carlos Correa, I think this deal is going to get done. I think there's a lot of talk is what the Mets doing. Is this bad for baseball? I don't think it's bad for baseball. I do think it's potentially bad for Manfred. I think he sees his next contract as commissioner at risk with moves like this. I think there's a lot of small market clubs that are frustrated by what this billionaire is doing in New York.
Treating his baseball team like a car he's tinkering on, where it's like, I don't care what money I'm losing on this. Like,
exactly. So I do think that Manfred has a lot of he's navigating delicately through a stormy sea at the moment, but he has to be mindful of his long-term security. So I do think that there is a role that he is playing in this contract talk right now. All contracts need league approval. So no matter how much Cohen and Boris think this is a great deal, if Manfred isn't cool with it, if he's not looking out for the other 29 teams and their considerations, this deal isn't getting approved. So I think in light of all this medical shenanigans we've seen over the last week, I think Manfred is definitely getting his sticky fingers involved with this, looking out for the other owners. I think precedence needs to be set in this moment that people, ownership groups are able to get out from unhealthy contracts. And I think what the holdup is right now, I mean, the timing of Christmas break is a factor in the delay, I think. But I think a big part of it is agreeing on, look, there is a situation where Carlos Correa plays two or three seasons of this contract and they aren't good. And he misses some time for some injury that is a new injury. Maybe it is a lower back thing or a hamstring thing or whatever. And the Mets want out of this contract because this is a pre-existing condition related to the ankle. And Correa says, nope, this is a new thing. My ankle's still fine. My doctor says it's fine. Mets doctor says, no, it's not your ankle. It's your hamstring, but it's because of overcompensating for the ankle injury. So now we got to go to an independent third doctor. And I think that's in this moment, maybe they're trying to agree on who is that independent third doctor.
I mean, the truth is a bum ankle is probably the worst case scenario for a shortstop. Like, I mean, my goodness.
It's the kind of thing that would slow him down, but he wouldn't necessarily miss time for, but would reduce the range, would reduce the reaction speed, would react. Like, it's just going to nag at him in the batter's box. If the ankle injury does flare up, it's not going to necessarily show up on the games played column, but it could show up on the production side.
And this is another thing to think about when you're talking Carlos Correa, is that when it's a 12-year contract, even if he can manage to stay on the field for the next 3 to 4 years and tough through this bum ankle, like, my God, that's a hefty price to be paying for a 33-year-old DH, right? Like, if you need to move him to designated hitter at the age of 32 or 33, like, wow.
Well, I mean, look what we just saw with Fernando Tatis Jr., right? Where he signed his deal and then all of a sudden the injuries started peeking out, right? We have this shoulder injury and the response that he gave was, well, I've always kind of had a sore shoulder, as if that was supposed to put anybody's mind at ease, right? But really it's just like, no, my shoulder's always been injured and I've just toughed it out until I got my contract. But now that I'm paid, I would like medical attention, right? So, I mean, there's that potential too with Correa where he's like, yeah, my ankle freaking hurts every single day potentially, right? But just let's give me that cortisol shot. Let's suck it up and get out there. And once I get my $300 million contract, okay, now I can go to the medical tent and get this thing x-rayed properly. I don't know. There's the potential for that. I'm not saying that's what it is, but wouldn't be the first time.
Very interesting. I've never thought of it from Manfred's standpoint. You paint a picture there. That's brilliant. Yeah, this is a nightmare for him. I've only thought of it from the owner's standpoint. Yeah. I think the owners love this myself personally. I think the owners see it as a higher collective bargaining tax check that Cohen has to cut. So that's more money in their pocket. They can have their cake and eat it too, because they'll cheer for the Mets not to win the whole darn thing. And this gets all the owners closer to that salary cap that they so desperately want.
Yeah. No, that's a great point, Craig. Okay, let's end on this. I'll be very honest. I loved Teoscar Hernandez. He was just such a fun player to watch. I love the production he brought. Perennial silver slugger. Just a really... In a time when Blue Jays baseball was difficult to watch. I'm talking 2018, 2019, 2020. He provided some excitement offensively that this fan base desperately needed. I love Teoscar. I do think this team is better and much more balanced with Lourdes and Teoscar gone. I think that a lot of holes within the organization are being filled. I think that this organization is finally getting away from a all right-handed hitting order. And I think that that's incredibly important, but it doesn't take the sting away from a favorite player leaving. So I want to, and for everyone watching on YouTube, feel free to drop a comment here. But I'm curious if there was some time in your sports fan history where a favorite player was traded or moved, where even to this day you think back and you're like, oh, that still hurts a little.
For me, I'm a Dolphin fan. So Dan Marino my whole life. So I did get lucky there. Kobe Bryant my whole life. I did Magic Johnson my whole life. So I got lucky in a lot of different instances. What comes to mind is probably the Shaq trade when he was traded away from the Lakers and Toronto Blue Jay wise. And it had to be done. Don't get me wrong. The Blue Jays timeline for winning was way different than Roy Halladay's timeline for winning. So that trade did have to happen. But forget about it. I mean, I'm one of those Blue Jay fans. And you reminded me of that, Scott, because you said, hey, during the lean years, Teo was one of the rare ones to put that smile on her face. That describes Roy Halladay. The Blue Jays did zero winning when Roy Halladay was a Toronto Blue Jay. Absolutely none. He was the smile on our face every fifth day. So I'll go with Roy Halladay.
Love it. How about you, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, Roy Halladay definitely stands out. Never was elite for years. Should have asked for a trade a long time. Oh. Never did.
Yeah.
Never did. Nope. The trade felt like...
See, Adam, part of this thing, too, is the return haul didn't do anything to make us feel better, did it? Because the return haul did not work out. Did not work out.
No, it didn't.
No, there was no Gabriel Moreno coming back. That's for sure. This is, I guess, the opposite spin here that I'm going to throw at you. But do you remember 12-ish months ago when we traded away Randall Grichuk for Raimel Tapia? And the fan response there was like, Raimel Tapia? And Grichuk was kind of the same guy. Like, he was the older generation of Blue Jays, you know, the face of the franchise on the commercial breaks during the lean years, right? But was not a part of the future with this team. And I think that there's some comparables there with Teoscar, right? Where was, you know, one of the few reasons to tune in during the Grichuk years, but it's kind of run his course and we need to move on. We got over Randall Grichuk. Did anybody keep up to date with Randall Grichuk last year? I mean, for all the Raimel Tapia questions, he honestly put in a pretty decent season. Like, I think he put together a season better than we expected out of him.
I would agree with that. I'll go with Sean Green. Really upset me when they moved him in 2000 to the Dodgers. I was just so...
That's a good one.
So heartbroken. I was so heartbroken just because I love Delgado and Green so much. And they were just like these two young studs coming up together. And that 98 team was so freaking good. Mm-hmm. And I know they only freaking finished third in the division, but I look back on that 98 season and I'm just like, man, like they had so many great players and just we're dealing with the juggernauts that was the Yankees and it just didn't pan out. But yeah, Sean Green was one that hurt. Roy Halladay, obviously. Even Marcus Stroman, I know, despite a lot of people's dislike, and I totally understood them moving on from him in 2018. That made all sorts of sense, but that one hurt too. I just, you know, in 2015, when Marcus came back from that injury on short, you know, he was predicted to be out for 18 months and then came back after 10 and then pitched a gem in the playoffs. Like, it was hard not to love Marcus. So that was another one that kind of stood out to me. Again, in the comments, feel free to drop that guy on the team who was traded and then it just hurt.
Now, Scott, shout out to that 98 Blue Jay team. That was Roger Clemens won the Triple Crown that season and his second straight Cy Young with the Blue Jays. And Jose Canseco, one of my favorite stats, one of my favorite facts, Jose Canseco, he had I think it was 46 home runs that season for the Blue Jays. So Jose Canseco, we think of him as a bash brother. We think of him as a home run hitter. That 46 in his one season with Toronto, that's his career high. How about that? Jose Canseco actually had his career high with the Toronto Blue Jays.
By the way, 1998, the only time in Blue Jays history where they had more than one player on the team to hit 30 home runs and steal 30 bases. It is insane to me that Sean Green and Jose Canseco both did that in 1998. Like,
wow, I didn't know that.
I haven't gone through the history books of all of baseball, but I can imagine that we're talking a handful of times that's ever happened. So very cool.
30 and 30, pretty wild. Dalton Varshow has some speed to him.
Hello.
There's some rule changes coming that might increase stolen base production as well.
We want bigger bases. We want massive bases. Pizza box size bases.
You know, fewer pickoff attempts to first. There's just a few little wrinkles. Dalton Varshow, I mean, there's a chance in the next 4 years he's a 30 and 30 guy.
Love that. Love that optimism, buddy.
last question. I'll leave you with this, Scott. You mentioned the 1998 season, Blue Jays really turned on the coals the second half of the season, still fell short, missed the playoffs. Boy, could they have done some damage with expanded playoffs. Oof. At what point do we stop referring to them as expanded playoffs? Like, I mean, we still do it, but like, at what point are they just the playoff? Like, you know, what are we at now? Five teams make it, six teams make it. How many years in a row do we need to stop adding teams before we say, okay, this is just playoffs now? And we can look back at the 1998 years as the contracted playoffs. I don't know. I think this is good for baseball. I'm thrilled because I think that this is good. The Phillies run they had this past season, that's good for baseball. Good for Phillies fans. Good for – it sucks. It sucks when you have a good team that gets hot at the right time and they still were eliminated back in April.
Well, Adam, you talk about phrases, you know, the whole phrase World Series contender. We can crumple that up in a ball and throw it out the darn window. If you're a playoff contender, you're a World Series contender. Yeah. Take your mind's eye back to the day the Philadelphia Phillies clinched a playoff spot. You didn't notice it. You didn't care at all. They were just one of the seven teams in the National League. The year before, Hotlanta makes the playoffs with 88 wins. I'm supposed to be impressed by that. But what happened? They got hot at the right time. They won the whole darn thing. What happened with Philly? They get hot at the right darn time. They end up going to the World Series. So speaking of phrases that I think will become obsolete thanks to this new playoff format, World Series contender. If you're a playoff contender, imagine the Toronto Blue Jays in a while. Everyone keeps telling me, well, the Jays can't catch the Yankees. First of all, that's going to have to be proven on the field. But second of all, let's say that that's accurate and the Jays are a wild card team. That three-game series you're talking about, by the time that three-game series happens, it could well be Manoa game one, Tiedemann game two, Gausman game three, nighty-night.
Yeah. Love hearing that sort of thing, Craig. Let's end on that. Thank you so much, my dude, for coming back on the show. You know we always love having you on, and you're welcome anytime. So appreciate it. A very happy holidays to you, a happy new year, and we'll see you in 2023. For all of you watching, thank you so much. It means the world to Adam and I, the community that has been built around this freaking little podcast. It blows my mind. So thank you to all of you. A very happy new year and Merry Christmas to everyone out there. If you want to help us hit 1,000 subs before 2023, it would be greatly appreciated. If you're watching this on the main channel, you go to the Clips channel and hit that subscribe button. If you're watching on the Clips channel and you haven't hit subscribe, we appreciate if you do. All right, everybody, take care of yourselves. All the best. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.